You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 399, and today we are talking about books being released on January 31st, 2023, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Kelly Jensen, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. Kelly Fifth Tuesday Jensen!
Yeah, and kicking off the year with doing all the books, which was nice. Like, it really honestly helped me get, like, my reading life in order to start the year. So, yeah, good stuff.
Well, I'm glad we could help. I added that extra Tuesday to the month just for you.
Perfect. Can I tell a funny story?
Of course.
So when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to read, I saw that Ginger Duggar had a memoir coming out, and I didn't actually think I would get my hands on it, and I managed to get the audiobook copy of it, and I was really excited to listen to it, and I said to Liberty, what do you think people would think if I talked about Ginger Duggar's memoir? And what did you say?
Who's Ginger Duggar?
Yeah. Which, like, warmed my heart, honestly. Like, I love that. So for those of you who do know who that is, I'm not going to talk about the memoir today, but I will say it's interesting and it's worth reading, particularly if you want to hear about how someone who grew up in a very conservative Christian background came to untangle some of those beliefs that she was raised in. It's still very Christian, if that is something that you aren't interested in, but I found it fascinating just to see, like, how one kind of unlearns things that they have grown up with believing. But I'll leave it at that and say, like, sorry, I'm not going to give that as my, like, recommendation this week, but bonus recommendation.
Yeah. Well, I'll read anything if people tell me I should, you know. I just didn't know who it was. And I looked it up, and it sounds like the family is a mess.
That's a very nice way to put it. I think there are maybe three or four who have kind of gone out on their own and figured some stuff out. And it shouldn't be surprising. They're the oldest girls who live with some horrific stuff growing up. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I say, family is a privilege, not an obligation.
Yep. Exactly.
So what else? I'm trying to think. I don't have any funny stories, I don't think. No. I got nothing this week. We're recording this episode before we're recording the 124 episode because I'm taking time off next week. So you were so nice to agree to record this early. So I'm very, very confused as to, like, what is going on. I did, as many of you know, I've been really sick the last several months. And I'm feeling good today because I finally had an appointment with the specialist. And she told me all this great stuff. You know, so I still feel horrible right now because we can't do anything about it for a couple of months. But I'm like last week I was so sad when I recorded the show because I felt just awful. And I apologize because I feel like it came through in the recording that I was really miserable. So I still feel miserable, but I'm happy. Like, yay.
Yeah.
Like we know what this is now and we're gonna fix it. So
good. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
That's like oversharing. Sorry. It's all I've got going on.
No, but it's a reminder to folks, I think, that, like, you could be sick for a long, 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 long time, and it's not because you're not doing anything about it, but just because some stuff takes a long time to get an answer to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially now, you know, appointments and specialists and everything, you know, like in every, you know, job field, you know, they're missing employees and it just takes a long time. So you know, I made an appointment like 3 months ago and I was like so worried. It's like it was a virtual appointment. So I was really worried, like, please call, please call. I've been waiting 3 months. Yeah, but it was great. So that's really all I got. And then next week I have the week off and I'm going to read some books that I'll probably be talking about on the show. There's some TV I want to watch. I kind of want to watch the Poker Face show with Natasha Lyonne. It's like the new Rian Johnson show on Peacock.
You know how you asked, like, who are the Duggars?
Yeah.
That's me with most TV that didn't come out, like, 15 years ago.
Well, I think it starts next week. Mm-hmm. So, next week from when we're recording. So, I'm very excited. But before I tell you all kinds of other things, we are going to hear from our first sponsor. Okay, so moving away from television now and doctor's appointments and the Duggar family, I want to remind you that if you are looking for the perfect Valentine's gift for your bookish boo, you could give tailored book recommendations. Your boo will tell our professional book nerds what they love and what they don't, what their reading goals are, and what they need more of in their bookish life. Time, it's always time. But aside from that, what they want to read. Then they will just sit back while our bibliologists go to work selecting books just for them. TBR has plans for every budget, so you can surprise your bookish boo with tailored book recommendations this Valentine's Day by visiting mytbr.co/gift. All right, now, on to the books. I kind of feel like I'm cheating with my first pick today because it's Exiles by Jane Harper. And Jane Harper is so excellent! Like, every book she does is so excellent. It's kind of like, why don't I just recommend the new Louise Penny every time she has a new book, you know? But it's different in that, one, she has like 20-something books now, Louise Penny. And you also have to like read them in order, really, so I don't recommend them. But if you haven't read Louise Penny, like, I think she gets better with each book. It's wild. But Jane Harper is an Australian crime writer. This is her fifth novel. It's the third in the Aaron Fox series. But unlike the Louise Penny novels, you don't have to read these in order. I mean, you don't have to read Louise Penny in order. Read them in whatever order you want. Go crazy. If Andrew gets to get up, we all get to get up. But I mean, these are specifically like, these Aaron Fox books stand alone. And the first one in the series was The Dry. They made it into an excellent movie with Eric Bana. I really enjoyed that. Aaron Fox is an Australian federal investigator. And in this one, he goes to the christening of a close friend's baby. He's going to be the baby's godfather, and he ends up in Australian wine country, and he's attending this christening. And while he's there, he checks in on the case of a local woman who went missing a year before. The last time he visited, a young woman left her baby in its carriage in an amusement park and disappeared, hadn't been seen since. And when he goes back to the christening, he learns there have been no leads, no one has seen her, no one knows what happened to her. And in between talking about this, there's also discussion of an unsolved murder in the area from years before. Now, Aaron Falk, if you've read the books, or even if you haven't, he's had some pretty gnarly cases, some pretty hard cases, and it's starting to get really hard for him. He feels like all he does is work. He's really, really good at what he does, but he just works all the time. He takes these cases and it's always tragic, and he's starting to think, like, maybe it's time for a break. Maybe he needs to make some new friends. Maybe he needs to find love. But the missing mother case, the woman who has been missing for a year, was the former sister-in-law of his godchild's father. And he knows that Aaron Falk is, like, the best at what he does. And he says, you know, will you please look into this while you're around? Because you're the best at what you do. He also can't avoid this, like, little itch in his brain that is drawing his attention to these cases, like something about them together. So he decides he's going to figure out what's going on. It's very atmospheric. It's, like I said, set in the Australian wine country, which was not a thing I knew about until I read this book. Harper is so excellent at describing settings. If you read her first standalone, The Lost Man, which was set in like the dangerous, dangerous heat of the Outback, that book, oh my goodness, I was so stressed out that people lived there, like really actually lived there while I was reading that book because she did such an amazing job of describing it. She's so good at place. And this one is also really beautifully paced. It's as much a story about Aaron Falk and where he is in his life as it is about the mysteries. I do want to give content warnings for car accidents, chemical use and abuse, loss of a loved one, violence, murder, intimate partner abuse, and sexual assault. If you've not read Jane Harper, pick this one up. Pick any of them up. This is Exiles by Jane Harper.
My first book is The Black Queen by Jumaida Emil. And it starts with Nova Albright, who is going to be the first Black homecoming queen at Lovett High School. This is a huge deal, especially because the system at Lovett has been rigged in favor of white courts since the beginning, as the school came to be what it is post-Katrina, and it combined the rich white students from one part of the Mississippi town with the lower-income Black students of another part. The Black students are de facto segregated at the school. They're not in AP courses, but they are there to help school sports teams do really well. This little factoid is important for several reasons, including why Nova's crowning is especially important. So, of course, it's suspicious when Nova is found dead days before homecoming on the same night that a viral video of Tinsley MacArthur emerges. Tinsley, who believes she deserves the crown, Tinsley, who has a family legacy to uphold, and Tinsley, who, conveniently, was drinking with her friends that night and said she was going to murder Nova. But Tinsley swears she's innocent. This was a setup by her ungenerous so-called friends. She was drinking when she made that statement, and she absolutely did not kill Nova. Or did she? This thriller did everything I want a good thriller to do. It kept me guessing and wondering who was responsible for Nova's death. I am usually a reader who knows immediately what happened, but this one kept me changing my mind throughout the book until its final twisty and super satisfying conclusion. It's told through two different perspectives, Tinsley's as well as Nova's queer best friend, Duchess Simmons, and readers get to see the very different lives in this Mississippi town between the white haves and the Black have-nots, which that's a little reductionist to say, as this book explores a lot having to do with social class and race, but the purposeful choice of narrators is to highlight this very thing. It was really smart to see Tinsley's side of the story and the ways in which her family's history played into her attitudes, not just toward Nova, but toward Black people more broadly. Duchess, on the other hand, offered insight into Nova as a person. Although Nova was really well-liked, I mean, she was homecoming queen for a reason, she had a number of secrets that even her closest friends did not know. Those secrets which started to come out through Tinsley as she vies to prove her innocence, they begin to lead Duchess into questioning whether she even really knew Nova at all. So in addition to the whodunit aspect of the story, ML explore some really meaty topics here, including the criminal justice system. Duchess's father works for the police and is a Black man on the force. He's in a particularly unique and vulnerable position, especially as Tinsley remains free following Nova's murder. While just up the highway in Jackson, Mississippi, an innocent Black man was put into jail following the murder of a white family he worked for. Duchess had always wanted to get into law enforcement herself, but because of what that might mean and the institutional racism built into the system, she is not so sure. What Duchess is sure of is getting to the bottom of Nova's death. So together and separately, Tinsley and Duchess are able to find out the truth, and as a reader, I thought it was the right answer to the story and that not a single person in the book was flaw-free. Everyone was messy, and that mess made this read so compelling. Emil, the author, works as a reporter on crime in the South, and his knowledge and his talent and his experience absolutely shine through on this. I couldn't stop thinking about Tiffany D. Jackson's The Weight of Blood, and I think that if you liked Jackson's latest book, this one is a natural one to pick up next. And that is The Black Queen by Jumaida Emil.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that one. I just got a copy last night, so I'm looking forward to reading it, but it did immediately remind me of the Jackson, which I loved last year.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that was the first thing I thought. I was like, oh, this is going to be really similar, and yeah, there's some similar vibes, but I think that what they're both trying to do is so interesting to think about in conversation with each other, and both are very successful separately and successful when you think about them together.
So I'm going to change it up quite a bit now and tell you about Vampire Weekend. Not the band, but the book by Mike Chen. Although you can't help but think of the band as soon as you hear the title, which is great. I love a vampire story. I go through phases where I tried to deny this, but I just, when I was in high school, like, surprising no one, like, if you just look at my life now and work backwards, I read hundreds of vampire novels when I was a kid. Like, you can just tell. And so then I was like, oh, I've read them all, but there's so many different ones and they can all still be so different and fun. And this one is fun. It's about a young vampire in the Bay Area named Louise Chow. She's a young vampire because she was only turned in the 1960s, which is relatively young for vampires. Louise Chow is a musician, and all she wants to do is play in a band and rock out and go to punk rock shows and just music, 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 music. That's all she's interested in. But it's really hard to be in a band and spend a lot of time around people when you're a vampire. Like at the beginning of the book, she's at an audition and somebody brings a garlic sandwich or garlic food to the audition while she's there, and she gets like a bad nosebleed and has to leave because, you know, vampires and garlic, you know? And like, hey, if you're a vampire and you like hang out with people for really long times and you start not to age, like people will notice these things. And she's just really lonely. When she was turned, she had to disappear from her family because, again, people would get suspicious if you go many years without aging. And so now she knows, like, she has family out there, but many of them are gone now, and she doesn't know the other members of her family. She does drink blood, but she doesn't kill people to get it. And the big thing is that you can't tell anyone that you're a vampire. Like, first of all, who's going to believe you, right? But, like, if word gets out that you revealed that you were a vampire, the other vampires are going to come for you. So she's just so lonely. She works at night as a custodian at a hospital because that gives her access to blood. And then one day her distant young cousin shows up. And all of a sudden she has this connection. She has family and she has a connection with someone. He's super into punk rock and music, and they're having a great time just hanging out and going to shows. But unfortunately, Ian discovers that Louise is a vampire, and then he wants her to do him a big favor. Now, if you think about vampires and what they can do, you can probably guess what that favor is, but I'm not going to spoil it for you. But I mean, this novel is vampires. They're just like us, with jobs and feelings and problems and regrets and, you know, the blood drinking. That's the, you know. But I mean, there's also a storyline involving an estranged relative. This is really, though, a love letter to making music and listening to music. I always read Goodreads reviews after I've read something. And, you know, there were a few people who were like, oh, this wasn't for me because I like my vampires to be all broody and biting people and murder and creeping around in the shadows and sexy vampires. And, like, there are a lot of books to fulfill those needs. Like, this is not that book. I like to think of this as a novel about a woman with problems like the rest of us who just happens to drink blood and what she's going to do about a complicated family situation. I love Mike Chen. I loved his book about superheroes, We Could Be Heroes. I loved the book that came out, I think, last year, which was Light Years From Home. Because like the vampire novel, which is like, it's an everyday thing with vampires. This one was like, what if somebody really was abducted by an alien, you know, in like your everyday life, and then they come back? You know, it was great. He does great time travel books. I just love him. I do want to give content warnings. Big surprise, it's a vampire novel. For gore and death, illness and loss of a loved one. This is Vampire Weekend by Mike Chen.
It's funny because I had this one on my shortlist, like when we were figuring out what we were each going to read for this episode. Yeah. This one was on my like list of potential titles because it sounded like the kind of vampire stories I like too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like a good bloody vampire story, but I also like the ones where it's like, wait a minute, are they just people?
I'm really excited to hear about your next book because that I wanted to read that one for the show, and you picked it first, and I've heard just amazing things.
Yeah, it's funny. It's getting a big marketing push, which always kind of gives me, like, a pause. Like, is it going to live up to the hype? And absolutely.
Yay.
Yeah, my next pick is The Davenports by Crystal Marquis. In the early 1900s, C.R. Patterson was a black carriage manufacturer, as well as an entrepreneur and a civil rights activist. He'd been born into slavery, but he escaped and he became extremely wealthy with his invention. So that's like real. That's real history right there. Marquis, in her book, The Davenports, reimagines Patterson's family story in what I think could really be well described as like a frothy, upper-class historical novel, perfect for readers who are itching to see Black people of society at the turn of the 20th century in Chicago. This is a really fun one, and it blows by, and the entire cast is Black. So it's told through four distinct voices. The Davenports follows sisters Olivia and Helen, first and foremost. So Olivia is going to be wed to a businessman from England that her family has found and approves of. It'll help her family continue to be of society and maintain their wealth. But unfortunately for the family, Olivia finds herself running into a young activist named Washington DeWright, and she becomes quickly infatuated with him. She is obsessed with his causes and his desire to make the world a better place for marginalized people. And were she not a member of the Davenports, this elite Black family and class, she would have no qualms about running off with him. But as it stands, that's not necessarily an option for her. She's got duty and roles to fulfill as a Davenport. So the second sister, Helen, is the youngest daughter, and she is completely disinterested in anything stereotypically female. She loves to work on cars and is far more interested in continuing to grow the family business than she is to get married. So when she begins to fall for the guy who is supposed to wed her older sister Olivia, things get complicated on a number of fronts. So then the two remaining voices in the story are those of Amy Rose, who is the childhood friend and maid to the Davenport sisters, and then Ruby, who is Olivia's best friend. Amy Rose has had an extremely lucky upbringing, being friends with the girls for whom she is employed to serve. She's dreamed of opening up her own hair salon, and she'd love to do it on the south side of the city to serve an all-Black clientele. In addition to putting money away to pursue that dream, Amy Rose also harbors a mega crush on somebody who is completely unreachable to her, John Davenport, who is the brother to her charges. There's no way she would ever marry him. There's no way he'd ever marry her. They're very, very different classes and standings. So, like, it's an impossible dream here. And then finally, Ruby is a family friend whose own family also is quite wealthy, or at least they were until her father decided he was going to run for mayor of the city, and now finances are a lot tighter. To keep afloat, Ruby's family is determined to have her marry John Davenport. Besides, the Davenports and the Tremaines becoming one unified family will ensure not only financial security, but ensure that their social standings remain, even if Ruby's father's bid for mayor doesn't end up being successful. So as we get to know all four of the girls, we begin to see where their loyalties lie. Is it in tradition? Is it in charging their own path? Is it in something else completely different? I found each of the girls' stories in this so compelling, and I loved getting to know them each individually as well as collectively. I rooted for each of the girls in her own story, and I think that the author offered readers such satisfying conclusions to their stories. This is apparently the first book in a series, but you can read it solo, and the ending works as a standalone, so you won't be left hanging for like what happened to each of them. There are plenty of storylines that can continue on, but you'll walk away feeling very satisfied. I loved the look at this particular moment in Chicago history through both wealthy Black families and an individual who worked hard on behalf of one of the families and was also able to pursue her own dreams at the same time. There is a lot here about this moment in time when it comes to Jim Crow laws, racism, and gender inequality, and there's equally as much here about how these girls came to stake a claim on the person for, you know, who they've fallen, who they have a crush on, who they secretly have a crush on and hope for more from. The book reminded me a lot of how I felt reading Saving Savannah by Tanya Bolden, which puts a wealthy Black family at the center of historical fiction as well. And it gives a voice to the sorts of stories we don't get to read enough of. And in the case of the Davenports, it's the kind of fun, soapy historical romance that I think more and more readers are itching for and want more diverse perspectives from. And so this one totally satisfies. And that is The Davenports by Crystal Marquis.
All right. Awesome. I'm going to read that very soon. So those are books that we read that are coming out today. And now we're going to talk about a few more of today's releases in hardcover and paperback that we are excited about but haven't necessarily read. I'm going to kick it off with This Other Eden by Paul Harding. Paul Harding won the Pulitzer Prize for his novel Tinkers many years ago, which is just beautiful, beautiful writing. He's also seriously one of the funniest people I have ever met. His writing is always so beautiful, but so heartbreaking. And then you meet him and he's just a scream, like absolute scream, which I love that about him. And I'm very excited for this new one. It sounds no different than his other books in that it is a tragic story. It is the true story of Malaga Island, which was an isolated island off the coast of Maine. It became one of the first racially integrated towns in the Northeast. In this novel, the formerly enslaved Benjamin Honey and his wife Patience move to this empty island off the coast of Maine. It's barren, there's harsh conditions, the weather obviously in Maine is just awful, there's a lack of supplies and food, but they are safe from the prejudices of the mainland, and they make it their home. And over many centuries, their descendants live there, and they struggle for food and warmth, but they make it work, and they live relatively in peace until the early 20th century, when a man named Matthew Diamond showed up. He was a teacher, and he decided that the children on the island needed schooling. Like, he knew better than anyone, and he was going to go out there and start teaching the children, you know, officially as a teacher. And this work attracted the attention of the local authorities, who had at that point basically left the island alone, and led by the popular eugenics-based thinking of the day, they ended up forcibly removing everyone from the island and institutionalizing them, and the state took control of the island for its own use, which is devastating. It sounds devastating, but it's an important story, and it has received all the stars, all the amazing reviews, and so I'm very excited to read this. It is This Other Eden by Paul Harding. Kelly, what do you have for us first?
So I actually read all of my books this week.
Awesome.
Yeah, which I didn't think would happen, and then it did, and I was super excited. But I'm going to start with the paperback that's out this week, and that is The 90s by Chuck Klosterman. This was one of the most interesting nonfiction reads I picked up last year. Whether or not you're into 90s nostalgia, and I'll say from the start, like, I am not into the nostalgia part. This is a really fascinating and compelling look at the decade and everything that has come from it. That see-through phone on the cover, I absolutely had that, and it was a prized possession, and so, like, I'm also enamored with the cover of this one. So if you like the podcast You're Wrong About with Sarah Marshall or The History of the 90s with Kathy Kinzora, you are going to be super into this book. It is an exploration of the actual history of the 90s through politics and pop culture, and it's fascinating how Klosterman takes what seem like disparate stories and weaves them into a narrative together with plenty of questions that turn the microscope on media and the 24-hour news cycle, including the one that struck me, which was, why was the media obsessed with Michael Jordan's baseball career that absolutely meant nothing? Gave me a lot to think about with sort of what I remember growing up with and what has stuck with me through the years. If this kind of history is your jam, you'll like it. If you're looking for an answer or a thread that unifies the 90s or Gen X, it's there and it's not there for purposeful reasons. Like, I'll be really curious what can be said about the early 2000s and where that can be seen as history if Klosterman hasn't talked about millennials as much in the 90s. Like, what would his perspective be in this next decade? Folks like me who are kind of in that Zennials period, who really straddle that bizarre world of online all the time versus was never online, like, we'll get so much out of this book from that time where, like, we were just not connected to the world around us or only got our news through very specific mediums and channels. So a couple things to note about this book. Though Klosterman does a good job taking a holistic and racially minded look at the decade, he's still a middle-aged white guy, so there's stuff here that I think would be fascinating to hear from more diverse perspectives. And if you are a person who loves the 90s nostalgia piece, this book might shift your view a bit. the thing I appreciated about this book, and as well as the podcast that I mentioned, is that they're great at reminding you that even history that wasn't that long ago is tainted and changed by the passing of time. There are always new meanings and understandings, and that sort of insight helps put the current moment into a clearer lens. And that is The 90s by Chuck Klosterman.
Okay, two things. One, we're going to hear from our next sponsor. Two, when I talked about this book in hardcover when it came out, I think basically the first thing I said, or at least one of the important things that I took away from this book, was that I'd always wanted a clear phone and I never got to have one. Oh. So now I'm like so jealous of you.
Oh.
Because, you know, and like now I don't even have a landline, so I can't buy myself one, you know, but yeah, I love the cover so much. So I'm wicked jealous that you got one.
That may have been like the only like cool thing I had growing up. So, you know, don't put too much into it. Like, if I talked about, like, I had a great home, like, to live in, but my room was in the basement and had wood paneling and didn't have a door and flooded whenever it rained because our sump pump never worked. So, like, I didn't have a lot of nice things, like, for money reasons as well as, like, logistical reasons.
Yeah.
But that phone, prized possession for sure.
So my next pick for today is Tomb of Sand by Jigenjali Shri. This is translated by Daisy Rockwell. This was the winner of the 2022 International Booker Prize, and it is the first novel translated from an Indian language to win the International Booker Prize. So double yay! This book is enormous, and when I got a copy, I started it because I was like, ooh, won the Booker. But then I kept setting it down to pick up stuff I needed for work sooner, and I never got to it. But I really, really want to. It's an epic set in contemporary northern India. It's about a family and its octogenarian matriarch. Her name is Ma, and she's 80. And when her husband dies, she refuses to get out of bed. And her family, her son and his children, they try to cheer her up. You know, they play music for her and try to tell her stories and try to, you know, convince her to leave her bed. And she won't do it until the younger son of the family brings her a gold cane covered in butterflies. And it changes everything. Because apparently there's something magical about this chain. It gives people magical powers. And Ma sets off on adventures like none she's ever had before in her life when she receives it. The blurb says it is rich with fantastical elements, folklore, and exuberant wordplay, which just, like, talking about this right now makes me wonder why, like, I didn't continue to read it, and I want to read it right now because it just sounds like so much fun. So I'm hoping to read that very soon. It is Tomb of Sand by Jigenjali Shri.
And then my final book is Central Places by Delia Kay. And my saying it both ways is important because there is a bit in the story about pronouncing names. So with that, I will start by saying that I do not care about book blurbs at all because I know how the sausage is made. But if you do like them or find them valuable, know that this is a debut work of Litfic, blurb by Celeste Ng. So that caught my attention right away when I saw it was also paired with this like neon cover, something that is pretty rare to see these days. And then as soon as I saw that and I saw that it was set in rural central Illinois, I was all in. I didn't think I'd actually get to reading it for this episode. And then I finished it last night and I was really glad I did. It's set over the course of what turns out to be a horrible and also enlightening week as the story follows Audrey Zhou. And I say Zhou because she talks about how common it is for people to mispronounce her name or choose to say it as Zhu instead of Zhou. And so like that little thing has stuck with me as kind of an interesting theme throughout the story. But anyway, so she left her childhood home in Hickory Grove as soon as she graduated high school. And she set her sights on the big city, moving to the Big Apple and getting herself this high-paying, high-pressure job that she always dreamed of. She found herself the perfect partner, too. His name is Ben, and he was born and bred in Manhattan, wealthy, and he seems to be kind of like the perfect guy. He is also white. So Audrey knows that in order to build the rest of their lives together, Ben's parents have graciously offered to help pay for their first condo in the city. She knows that she'll have to return to Hickory Grove and introduce Ben to her Chinese immigrant parents. Audrey is totally dreading this because her relationship with her parents is complicated and she left behind a lot of loose ends in her life when she moved out of town. And making it more complicated is that when she arrives at home, she and Ben are going to Walmart to pick up some supplies and she runs into Kyle, the guy from high school who she had this incredibly huge crush on, which they were friendly, but it was not a requited crush. But suddenly she's finding herself drawn to Kyle again, even with his, you know, he's a very different person than she ever imagined herself with. And he's very different than even she remembers him being when they were in high school. And she's also at this point where she's like, but he knows who I was at that point, and that's attractive. But, you know, she keeps telling herself he's definitely not for her now. Or is he? This is a really fascinating story, looking at the children of immigrant experience set within a rural, primarily white community. And it looks at what happens when one hopes and plans for things that end up taking a detour when the past ends up being a little bit better than one may have remembered it being. It explores how parents change as you age, as well as what it is to leave some doors open from your past while others, which felt closed, can maybe be reopened. This is very character-driven, and Audrey is not an especially likable character. She is quite selfish and self-involved, but I found her so compelling for these reasons. I kept waiting for somebody to call her out, and it happens throughout the story more than once. So there's a lot of reckoning, not only with her internal stuff, but the facade she's put on now that she believes she has escaped the trappings of small-town America and what that means. This is one for readers who like that character-driven novel about young adulthood. I can't think of a, like, really great comparison, except that if you like YA coming-of-age stories, particularly about looking forward to the future while reckoning with, like, who you are in a specific moment, you know, like, those stories you read where a character has just graduated from high school and is going to go off to college, think like that kind of story, but it's an adult. She's in her 20s. So this is a different phase of life. And I think captures a lot of feelings and experiences that haven't always been, you know, written about in that particular age range. Like, I don't want to use new adult because I don't like the term, but, you know, this is going to really resonate particularly with, like, readers in their 20s looking for that kind of story. And that is Central Places by Delia Kai.
All right. So now we are going to talk about a few paperback releases coming out today, starting with hardcovers that are now in paperback. In Every Generation, Buffy, the Next Generation, Book 1 by Kendara Blake. Kendara Blake, I love her books, dark YA fantasy and horror, like Anna Dressed in Blood and All These Bodies and the Three Dark Crowns trilogy. This one tackles Buffy the Vampire Slayer lore and explores the next generation of the Scooby Gang. The sequel to this book is also out today. I haven't read it yet, but I am excited. I've never been interested in, like, Buffy spinoff stuff, but this one I am excited about. Eating to Extinction, The World's Rarest Foods and Why We Need to Save Them by Dan Saladino. I think the title says it all right there. Thank you, nonfiction. Woo! Fight Night by Miriam Taves. I recently saw Women Talking based on her novel from a few years ago, which was so difficult but so important to watch. And this one is about three generations of women in a family stuck together in their Toronto home. How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi, which is coming out in paperback today. It came out in hardcover in August of 2019. It is the New York Times mega bestseller, and it is now in paperback, about how the book's goal is to understand and stop racism and inequality in our society. Teach people how to do it. The book can't do it itself. The Memory Librarian and Other Stories of Dirty Computer by Janelle Monáe. Janelle Monáe is the amazing singer and actor. They were in Glass Onion, and I was like, why isn't Janelle Monáe in every movie? Completely transfixed by that. I'm so great in that movie. This is an anthology of speculative and sci-fi stories by Monáe and other authors that tie in with Monáe's Dirty Computer album. But you don't have to have listened to the album to enjoy the book. Vladimir by Julia May Jonas. I haven't read this one. So many of my friends have read this book and said it was amazing. And I keep meaning to read it. I haven't yet. This is about an English professor whose husband has been accused of sexual misconduct by several of his students. And while this is going on and she's trying to deal with that, she develops an infatuation with a visiting married novelist. The Books of Jacob by Olga Tokarczuk, translated by Jennifer Croft. Tokarczuk won the 2018 Nobel Prize for Literature. This book was a National Book Award nominee. It is about a charismatic religious leader in the 18th century. And a few paperback originals today. There's Sorry Bro by Talin Vaskuni, about an Armenian-American who breaks up with her boyfriend and finds love with a woman that she meets. The Second You're Single by Kara Tanimachi, about a freelance writer who hates Valentine's Day and the pressures of dating, so decides to start the Go Solo campaign, in which she encourages people to stay single for the month of February. So then, of course, that is when she meets the perfect person. And Woman, Captain Rebel, the extraordinary true story of a daring Icelandic sea captain by Margaret Wilson. So this is about Captain Thurider, and the blurb says that Thurider was Iceland's most famous female sea captain who constantly fought for women's rights and equality, and who also solved one of the country's most notorious robberies, which sounds very exciting. Also, all throughout the blurb, she's just referred to as Captain Thurider, which makes me wonder, like, did we know her first name? Now I need to read the book to find out, because I think they would have said it at least once, like, you know, Captain, you know, Sugarpants Thurider or whatever it is. But no, nothing, just Captain Thurider. So I want to know what her first name is. So I'm excited to read that one. And, all right, those are books out today. Kelly, what are you going to read next?
I am currently reading Spare by Prince Harry. And as somebody who has, like, no interest in the royals, I do have a lot of interest in this book. And I've been listening to it on audio, and there is a lot of traumatic stuff in there, a lot of dark stuff, don't get me wrong, but, like, some of the stuff in that book has made me laugh so hard, because you could tell the parts that Harry wrote himself.
Yeah.
Apparently, he likes to browse brainyquotes.com for fun, and he really likes Stewie from Family Guy. Like, I've heard about that two times at this point, so.
That's funny.
You know, it's just, it's that little stuff that, like, I don't know, it's keeping me going. What about you? What are you reading?
So I'm going to read Skull Water by Heinz Insu Fenkel, which is a novel about, or I should say, is an intergenerational coming-of-age novel set in South Korea. And also On the Savage Side by Tiffany McDaniel, who I love. She wrote The Summer That Melted Everything and Betty, and this is based on the true story of six missing women from a community. So excited about both of those. And that's it for today. We did it. Woohoo!
We did it, yeah.
Yeah, very excited. Don't forget that you can surprise your bookish boo with tailored book recommendations this Valentine's Day by visiting mytbr.co/gift. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. Thank you to the person who emailed recently and told me the name of that Sharon McCrum book with the dead people calling on the phone that I couldn't remember the title of. That's why I say these things. Everybody has an answer. You can find us online. I hang out on Instagram at Friends and Comes Alive. Kelly, do you still hang out on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm still playing violin on the sinking Titanic.
You can find Kelly at Verona Kelly Mars. That's VeronikellyMars. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and we appreciate it so much. Thank you so much to all of you who've done that and continue to do that. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime,
happy reading!